Helen, I just looked at these numbers. Pretty grim.
Those are computer costs.
Didn't we pay for those systems last quarter?
We did, but those are training costs.
Well, let me get this straight. We're spending more on training than we did on the computers? Boston doesn't show these costs.
They use a different system.
So?
Apparently with their computers, the people can train themselves.
Hello and welcome to the Hello and welcome to the Comcast, the best 30 plus minute album conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elisha. Joining me today, his likes include drinking tea, the BBC, and a nice shiny monocle. Leander Caney is here.
I thought you were gonna say something that rhymes with, you know, C and T.
and PCP.
A monocle, yeah.
Also joining us, he enjoys jean shorts, touching beards, and a great calf workout. Who doesn't? Buster Klein is here.
Hello.
How are those calves doing?
I haven't been working them out enough lately. So.
Oh, really? Well, they're still like 60 inches around circumference-wise.
Yeah.
They're just naturally yoked. Well, Lander, I've got a story this week that I'm actually not sure I should tell because it involves Sonos.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. Nice.
And
So Leander's going to go on a two-hour
that's
spree exactly that right. How he loves them.
I don't know if it's smart of me to actually bring a Sonos discussion to the podcast because you have to leave in an hour, right?
Yeah. We might not have enough time.
And plus, it'd be nice for me and Buster to be able to say stuff for the rest of the podcast. And that might not be possible if we bring up Sonos. But I got to take a peek at a secret new Sonos product.
What? How?
Upcoming. Well, you have to wait to hear. And we're going to be talking about some MacBook Pro rumors, and if these rumors end up being true, and it looks like they might be, and we're going to lead with this in just a second. We may be getting another new MacBook Pro sometime later this year. That's going to be the one that we actually kind of wanted in the first place. So if you already bought one, you might be upset to hear this news. I'll just put it that way. So we'll jump into that in just a sec. And we got to talk about an interesting story that came out this week. A former Apple employee, he was on Twitter this week, and he was talking about how Tim Cook has made Apple boring. And he brings up some good points, Leander. So I'm going to be interested to hear what you think about this. And I'm sure you're going to be like, this is totally, totally bull crap, of course. But he does bring some good points up.
So he does have some good points. Right.
Okay, so we'll talk about that in just a sec. Before we hop into all the good stuff, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. It's an all new year. It's 2017. Are you ready to make your next move this year? Maybe you're starting a business. Maybe you want to start a e-commerce store. You need a web presence on the web. Well, Squarespace can help you make your next move with a beautiful website that you could have up and running in mere moments. And it's so easy to do. You can create a beautiful website or an online store with one of their award-winning templates. You just choose it, and within moments, it's on the web. And there's no updating or installing anything. It's just all WYSIWYG, drag and drop. It's so easy to use, but it's incredibly powerful as well. You can customize every little aspect of your website to make it look like it's yours, uniquely yours, and not like anyone else's. And if you do get stuck when you're messing around with things, you can access Squarespace's 24/7 customer service. They have award-winning customer service always ready for you, and they are very, very helpful if you ever have a question or, you know, are trying to figure something out. Maybe you're trying to get tricky, because you can dive into the code if you want to, but you certainly don't need to, and that's kind of the point of Squarespace. And if you sign up for a year of service, you get a free domain name, and configuring domain names with Squarespace is one of the easiest processes I have ever gone through with a web host. Genuinely surprising. It was so easy. You can check it out at squarespace.com. You can build a website, use it for 2 weeks, and see how you like it. That's what I always tell people. Just try it out and see what you like. And if you decide you want to keep your service going, you can use code CULTCAST at checkout, and you'll save 10% off your first order. And if you order a year of service, you save 10% off that entire first year. So you'll get a pretty significant savings at squarespace.com. All right. Well, let's talk about Sonos a little bit. So I can't actually tell you about the product, Leander.
Because sworn to secrecy.
I was actually asked not to talk about it at all.
Oh, so here you are talking about it.
Well, I can just tell you they're working on something. No one's surprised to hear that.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, they are working on something. So I want to give a shout out to Big Torg, a.k.a. Torgerson. So he listens to the show and he lives in Seattle. And he reached out to me on Twitter and he was like, hey, I have a brand new set of Luma routers that I'm not using if you want them. And you know, Leander, have been talking about how great they were and the Eero and all that stuff. So I was like, shoot, I'll take those off your hands. So I met up with him yesterday and he works for Sonos. So he had me meet him at his office and they have these gorgeous offices down in downtown Seattle in one of the greenest buildings in, I think he said the world, it might be the United States. It's like a fully automated building that manages its own heating systems and stuff via like sunlight portals. And by that, I mean windows.
That's how they call them. No wonder they have amazing green, it's because they just change all the terminology, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's exactly what they did. It's actually just a normal office building built in the 80s. Gorgeous view of Seattle. And I was walking around. He was showing me the whole office and stuff. And he was kind of giving me like the tour. And we walk over to this one area. And he's like, I'm probably not supposed to show you this. I was like, oh, do tell. And he showed me a Sonos product that's going to be coming out sometime in the future. That's all I'll say. That looks like it's pretty cool, and I bet you it's going to be something that you'll be interested in. And I was like, oh,
does it work with Alexa?
I can't actually say if it does or not. He didn't actually say if it did or not. But it was really funny. He was, what's that?
Is it a smart speaker?
Maybe. It's a new blender from Sonos.
Okay.
That Leander will probably love. It was funny, though, as he was showing me around the office, he was showing me all these speakers. And, you know, I'm not super familiar with Sonos' products. I'm not you, Leander. I don't get them for free every time they come out with a new one. They don't send me one to review. He was like, oh, man, check out the bass on this one, right? So he cranks up the music, and it sounds really good. And he has these speakers, like these beautiful, gorgeous Sonos speakers sitting up on, like, these speaker stands, you know, like 3 feet off the ground. And I guess he turned it up just a little bit too high because it shook itself off the stand and plopped to the floor like 3 feet down onto the ground. And I thought it was destroyed. And the whole office went silent to look at what was going on because this music was like, you know, filling the whole room. And then all of a sudden, like, thwack. And the whole, the office kind of shook a little bit because it hit the ground so hard. And he picked this thing up, dude, and he just kept on playing like no problem.
Yeah, quality stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sonos. Yeah, I know. I know you like them. Let's go ahead and talk about the 2017 MacBook Pro, Buster. This is your story, right?
I don't think so, but let's talk about it. Dude.
We'll talk. Pretend like you wrote it.
Oh yeah, 32 trigabytes of RAM and stuff. That one.
Did you say 2 trigabytes?
Yeah, trigabytes.
What the heck is a trigabyte?
It's just it's a lot more than a gig. It's just
wow,
so much RAM. You don't know what to do with it.
I hadn't even heard that terminology yet. You're so much in the know.
Is it really bigabytes?
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 Yeah. I think that's what Intel calls it.
Come on. I thought it said gigabytes, not bigabytes.
It says, I believe it says 32 gigabytes.
Gigabytes, that's pronounced. That's the word.
That's the word you were looking for. So check this out. According to Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, and for anyone that listens to this show, you already know, he's the only guy that ever gets anything right, and he's got a pretty gosh darn good track record. He says Apple will be launching a new 15-inch MacBook Pro later this year powered by Intel's next generation Kaby Lake. I don't know if this is Kaby or Cabby. I think it's Kaby. Forgive me. For all you nerds out there who actually know how it's pronounced, forgive me. It will feature, as Buster mentioned, 32 gigabytes of desktop-class RAM. And a lot of people were not very happy about the RAM limitation on the new MacBook Pro. Not a big deal to me personally, because I don't think I would need more than 16. And I'm going to guess that the 32 gigabyte model is going to be pretty expensive when they release it, because Apple, that's like their cash cow is the RAM. They make so much money off RAM. Anyway, Kuo says this will be the most significantly redesigned product this year. So major update coming to the MacBook Pro line. He also says that the MacBooks are going to be updated as well. And hopefully the prices will come down. But I'm going to guess that if they update the hardware, they're probably not going to lower the price. What do you think about that, Buster?
Oh, yeah. No way.
You think they'll leave it pretty high up there?
Yeah, definitely.
When did the MacBook Pros officially come out, the new ones? Do you guys remember?
The new ones with the touch bar? Just in October, right?
Was it October? It was not that long ago.
They didn't start shipping until
late November, right? Yeah.
So would you guys be pissed if you had bought a brand new MacBook Pro in November?
I mean, like I did.
And like less than a year. Well, you just literally just got yours, didn't you?
I did.
And then less than a year later, Apple updates them?
Yeah.
It's a spec update, which now we're complaining that Apple's going to update things too quickly. So no, I'm not going to complain. Like, if they want to update it within a year, that's great. Please do it,
That's
Apple.
A good point. Like, but it still kind of does. It still kind of sucks when Apple has trained you to believe that your computer is going to be relevant for at least a year.
But it is still relevant. Like, that's the thing. It's not like you have a crappy computer just because Apple came out with a new one.
That's true, but you don't have the newest and best, so you don't get that feeling of superiority over others when you see their computers without the touch bar.
We got to get over that newest and best superiority complex with tech, I feel like, because I feel like so often that's like we're waiting for the update instead of just going with what works. You know, I mean, is it gonna be? It'll. I think if you're a video producer and you just bought the 16 gigabyte MacBook Pro, then yeah, I'd be a little bit bummed out because you're going to get exactly what you want in 8 months or something. But other than that, for most people, it'll be fine.
We'll have to wait and see how this actually pans out. But it would be crazy to see Apple update these so quickly. I mean, speaking of companies updating stuff quickly, did you see that report about DJI this week, Buster? About how they're canceling production of the Phantom 4?
Oh, are they? Because for the Phantom 4 Pro?
It seems as though they sent out a note to all their dealers saying they were canceling production of the Phantom 4, and they're only going to produce the Phantom 4 Pro and the Mavic Pro from, I guess, the end of January onward. And the Phantom 4 has only been out for 10 months, and then they're already canceling production.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
They have production. It's like they can't produce enough anyway. They can't make enough Mavics fast enough. So they
Tell me about it. I ordered my Mavic in October, and I still have not gotten it. And now it seems as though there's no Mavic production in sight. They're just having terrible production issues. And as part of this note, they said that they are going to be stalling orders for all vendors and only fulfilling orders via DJI.com until the end of January. And then the end of January is Chinese New Year, so they anticipate production is going to stop for 2 to 3 weeks. And then at the end of that, they're going to start shipping drones again to their vendors. So if you're looking to buy a drone, or if you've already bought one, if you haven't, buy it from DJI directly. It's the only way to actually get one. And if you've already purchased from a vendor and you're waiting like I am, you may be waiting a while. We should probably move on from drones, though, because I don't want to piss anyone off.
The drone cast. You're droning on about drones.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we got some haters.
Yeah, so we don't want to make anyone irate. So.
People should check out Buster's nice review of the drone on the site.
I did publish that.
I'll link to that in the show notes. Buster has been reviewing the Mavic Pro, and well, for the limited time that you had it, most of its time it was in the repair shop, wasn't it? And we actually got to play with it for a total of 2 hours, and he wrote a huge. This is like the biggest review I think that's ever gone on Cult to Mac. How many words was this thing? Like 6,000?
No, it wasn't that long. It was like 1,000.
It was like one of those Ars Technica OS 10 reviews of yore. But it's got some video, and it's great. It's a really good review of the Mavic Pro. So if you are interested in reading more about that, I'll link to it in the show notes. Let's talk about Apple, Leander. Did Tim Cook make it boring, Leander? Is it his fault? Is that the problem? Is it Tim Cook's fault? He's so likable. I don't want to believe it.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
But he doesn't put a boot in your arse like Steve Jobs did.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. He's not that... he's not a taskmaster that Jobs was, but you know, I think it's hard to evaluate whether really that is the problem. Like I actually think the problem lies elsewhere. I don't think it's in Tim Cook's boot to ask facilities. You know,
boot to ask ratio.
Yeah,
his boot to ask ratio is much lower than Tim Cook's, and that may be the problem. Well, before we go into this conversation, let me go ahead and play the audio from this video of Steve Jobs talking about why he thinks collision at Apple, you know, conflict between people is a good thing. So let me play that real fast, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
What I've always felt that a team of people doing something they really believe in is like when I was a young kid, there was a widowed man that lived up the street. And I got to know him a little bit. I think he might have paid me to mow his lawn or something. And one day he said, come on into my garage, I want to show you something. And he pulled out this dusty old rock tumbler. And it was a motor and a coffee can and a little, you know, band between them. And he said, come on with me. We went out to the back and we got some rocks, some regular old ugly rocks. And we put them in the can with a little bit of liquid and a little bit of grit powder, and we closed the can up, and he turned this motor on. He said, come back tomorrow. And his can was making a racket as the stones went around. And I came back the next day, and we opened the can, and we took out these amazingly beautiful polished rocks. The same common stones that had gone in through rubbing against each other like this, creating a little bit of friction, creating a little bit of noise, had come out these beautiful polished rocks. And that's always been, in my mind, my metaphor for a team working really hard on something they're passionate about is that it's through the team, through that group of incredibly talented people bumping up against each other, having arguments, having fights sometimes, making some noise, and working together, they polish each other. And they polish the ideas, and what comes out are these really beautiful stones. Yeah.
Steve Jobs, not exactly known for being genteel. If he didn't like something that you were doing, would get in your face. And Leander, wasn't he intentional about having people argue about things that they were passionate and letting the best ideas win?
Well, I think that's the myth. I've spoken, you know, some staffers I've talked to, have said that they've seen people getting chewed out and that he did like to cause, because the best way to get to the bottom of an argument, to get to the bottom of an issue is to have a good argument about it. And, you know, he definitely respected people who had strong opinions and who stuck to their opinions. And he would definitely play devil's advocate to try to explore whether they really, knew something, whether they really believed in it or whether they were just trying to sell it to him. But, I talked to, like, a good example is the ex-CFO of Pixar, you know, I just talked to for the other podcast. He said that he never once had an argument with Steve Jobs. I mean, they had a lot of rational, sane, calm discussions. And he would sometimes get frustrated, but, you know, he didn't cause conflict for the sake of conflict. I think what he wanted to do is he wanted to get, you know, like, he wanted to explore issues, and sometimes he would get frustrated, and sometimes, you know, his temper would he'd blow his top, but I don't think he nurtured it as a strategy. Whereas I heard that Bill Gates definitely used to do that,
and make people stand by their ideas and see which one.
Yeah,
Gates
was really hyper competitive, and he used to set all his VPs against each other, and all the different departments against each other, and different products against each other.
He used to tape their hands together and then give them each a knife.
Yeah, but it was also reflected in the way that, you know, Microsoft was set up, all these different divisions. There's the Xbox division, and there's the Windows division and the Office division. Whereas, you know, Apple was much more, is vertically integrated. Everything is supposed to work together, the software, the hardware. And I think that was sort of reflected in the way that the internal decision making process was conducted. In other words, they were trying to be complementary rather than being competitive. And in fact, did you see, Buster, that Tony Fadell, the guy that ran the iPod division at Apple under Jobs for a long while, he jumped into this tweet storm and refuted that as well, and said that actually, that his style was cooperative rather than competitive.
Yeah.
It's interesting because this tweet storm that Lander was talking about came from an ex-Apple employee named Bob Burrow, and he had like 5 to 10 tweets about this topic, and he was saying that a lot of employees just won't talk about this issue because, Apple's culture is so secretive, and, you can get fired for talking about things publicly that you really shouldn't, that are internal to Apple. And it seems like his experience is totally different than what you just talked about. And he talked about how that conflict was a vital aspect of Apple, because people who would be willing to argue about stuff are often passionate about their ideas. And he noted that one of the first things that Tim Cook did when he took power was fired one of our personal favorites, Scott Forstall, and it made the executive staff more homogenous with ideas, with their ideas. So there was no internal conflict. And Tim Cook doesn't strike me as a guy who wants to argue with people. He does seem like he might strive for harmony. That's just my impression of the man. I don't know if that's accurate or not. Whereas Steve Jobs notoriously, I think one of the qualities that made him a businessman and made him who he was his absolute comfortableness with high amounts of discord. Like most people want to get along with the people that they work with, and Steve Jobs didn't seem to care about that at all. And he would scream at you and yell at you, and he didn't mind conflict at all. And he didn't mind extreme levels of conflict. I mean, levels of conflict that would make most people back off. It seemed like it only made him more aggressive in defending his positions. And I think that's one of the things that made him such a unique person and such a unique businessman.
But Jobs' career is marked by, very long and productive partnerships, with, first of all, Steve Wozniak in the early Apple years, and then later, with Johnny Ive, and of course all the other executives. And someone pointed out to me that you don't have long and productive relationships with people if you're screaming at them all the time. And so
you
think,
got to get the right people. Right. Yes, Mr. Jobs.
Yeah. Well, he had arguments because John Rubenstein, who I've interviewed a couple of times, told me that him and Steve used to get into big shouting matches, and he used to get into shouting matches with some of the other executives as well, the ones who, wanted to push back and were comfortable with doing that. And, of course, they'd shrug it off and they'd say, and they wouldn't take it personally. But I don't think he nurtured it, to be honest. Like Baz Ording, who I talked to, who worked there for a long time, said never once did he ever get into it with Steve. Steve, he said he used to see him get frustrated because he wanted to see things progress, and they'd have once every 2 weeks they'd have a meeting and they'd show him stuff, and if he didn't like it, he'd say, okay, show me something different next week. And if they didn't come back with if it didn't look like they'd been productive in that 2 weeks, like they'd made some progress and they'd try different things, that's when he would get annoyed and upset,
quote unquote annoyed.
and of course also they said he was also running. I mean, this is one of dozens of meetings he had with all sorts of different teams, marketing, hardware, software, et cetera, et cetera. So he would sometimes, obviously appear to be under pressure, or some things weren't going right with another team, so those pressures bore on him as well. But, I think the people I've talked to say that, he didn't use it as a management strategy.
So it was something that occurred, but not intentionally. It was just something that happened.
That's a good way of putting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not buying this then from Bob Burrow?
I think Bob's point was more about Tim Cook, being the opposite, like trying to eliminate all conflicts. Mm. And that's why he got rid of Scott Forstall, because presumably Scott Forstall used to like argue about everything. And he got rid of it. I guess he was the main thorn in his side on the executive team. And so he got rid of him for that, to try to make things a little bit quieter in his life. which may or not be true. You know, Forstall hasn't actually talked yet about, you know, what happened, you know, when after you know, he hasn't given an exit interview. So
I wonder if he ever will. Or if he's kind of holding his breath, hoping that he's going to end up back at Apple someday.
Right, and wait it out.
He's got like this sketchbook of all these ways to change the apps, add stitching, add leather interfaces. He's got like a whole book he just can't wait to show to Tim Cook to really spruce
Broadway,
things up.
He's a Broadway producer now, isn't he? Didn't he have a big hit show on Broadway?
Yeah, he won a Tony. Yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah, well, the play he produced did, yeah.
I think we talked about this a while back, didn't we?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Apple has become a more boring company since Steve Jobs' departure?
Well, I miss Steve, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, no one was as colorful as he was. As for the products, you know, you look back on Steve's reign with some rose-colored glasses, you know, and he definitely had his share of, you know, pedestrian products, you know, like the aside from the big breakthroughs, you know, the Mac line, I think, I think you're seeing the same thing because it's such a big place. No one person is responsible for everything. It, you know, it truly is like the product of that executive team and all the people they have working under them. And like the latest MacBook Pro that is, you know, already completely woefully outdated and a horrible piece of junk.
Definitely. Did you throw yours away?
I'm about to. I'm just gonna toss it in the trash as soon as I get home. But you know, a lot of that machine is really beautiful. You know, the touch bar is really wonderful. The keyboard is amazing. The overall portability of the machine is great. The screens are fantastic. You know, and this is, I think, what Apple really does best. You know, like that sort of evolution of making its products better and better with each generation, you know, each iteration, it gets better and better until you end up with something really, really astonishing. And these are astonishing computers by anyone's standards. I mean, I picked up an old MacBook from a few years ago, you know, one of the older Mac Pros, and my goodness, it's like four times as heavy.
Looks like a dinosaur, huh?
Yeah, it really does look dated. and it's when you look at it in comparison. I mean, you remember those old, you know, some of the earlier ones when they were kind of sort of bolted together. Mm-hmm. They were really kind of primitive looking before they went to that unibody design.
I like that design before, like the titanium models. Are those one you're talking about?
Yeah. But they look really primitive now if you look at it. It's like looking at the first iPod.
When you put the products together, they definitely look dated, for sure.
Well, what about Buster? What do you think?
Yeah, do you think Apple's become boring? I gotta ask.
I do kind of think a little bit, yeah.
I should say more boring. Clearly, yeah. We don't think it's boring. We're doing an Apple podcast.
Yeah.
But more boring than it used to be.
For sure. But at the same time, I don't think anybody's really doing anything that threatens Apple, you know, immediately. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think they're kind of like at a plateau point right now. But I also, I'm not like, oh, what was Apple's, you know, doomed or anything like that. I feel like we have this conversation every 4 months or something.
Yeah. We gotta keep checking in to see if they're doomed or not.
Yeah.
Doom status. We gotta have enough notice so we can move to the Windows podcast I've been talking about.
Well, look at the
starring Steve Bomb Dog Bomber is gonna be one of our co-hosts. Right. He's just gonna scream the entire episode at us. What were you going to say, Leander?
Oh, well, you know, the AirPods, I think, you know, like I know everyone's been raving about them, but they really are, you know, great. And it's a good example of what Apple does so well. They're so beautifully integrated to all its products. Things like, you know, that being able to, you pair it with one device and then it syncs with all the devices you have via iCloud, you know, that, and it's just one click to switch between them. Totally beautiful. You know, well thought out. And if you think about like Bluetooth and Bluetooth pairing, you know, what a pain it is, and how no one has rethought that process for like, how long is it now? I mean, like 20 years or more. And, you know, Apple really just sort of like dove in there and has made Bluetooth like a much nicer experience. I think also, you know, one of the reasons why we're not, you know, I think it's obvious that Apple's working on a huge, huge product behind the scenes.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
I think this has a lot to do with, you know, all these complaints that people have about its lack of focus, about it, you know, cutting products, not doing updates. I think it's distracted. I think they're They're working a big project behind the scenes, and of course it's chaotic, right? But they all are. They all were. You know, the iPhone had a lot of problems too. All of the major products, like, you know, go through a lot of turmoil internally. And I think this is the reason we're seeing a lot of the problems with Apple are because of that.
About the AirPods, I was just going to say real quick, since I reviewed them last week and I was mentioning some of the things I didn't like about them, I just installed the newest iOS beta, and I think most of my problems have been solved. I think maybe they solved some of those problems in the new beta, like those disconnect issues I was having when I was using them in the car has not happened since I installed the beta. So I'm wondering if maybe they kind of ironed out some of those features. Regardless, man, I love my AirPods.
Yeah,
right. One of my favorite products of the last several years, for sure. Alrighty, well, let's go ahead and talk about some news. Let's wrap up with some news. We got some iPhone 8 stuff here. Actually, before we talk about iPhone 8, let's talk about this rumor that will not die. And has only been bolstered this week from by a new report from the Wall Street Journal. They're saying that Apple is building a significant business centered around creating original content, including scripted television and possibly even movies. The content would be reportedly be made available on Apple Music, like the already announced Carpool Karaoke show and Vital Signs. Apple executives have told Hollywood that the new original content will probably launch around the end of 2017. And it looks like this move, now this is an odd angle, I think. The new move is more of a way for Apple to compete against Spotify and not a move to compete with Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. So I guess they'll make this stuff available on Amazon Music, and they'll hope that you'll choose on Apple Music, and they hope that you'll choose Apple Music over Spotify because you get to watch Carpool Karaoke. That's kind of an odd angle, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, it's working for Netflix.
Well, but Netflix is creating all original content. I mean, they're a programming company, and they're trying to push Apple Music as a music platform. And one of the things they're going to do to bolster their music platform is to create a TV show. Doesn't that seem kind of weird?
Well, because they kind of want it to be like MTV. Like when MTV was cool, like, you know, you had all kinds of things where it was more related to pop culture because music is always infused in pop culture. So I think it definitely makes sense. You know, like the Carpool Karaoke makes sense, I think. Planet of the Apps, I don't know. Maybe it's just something nerdy for Apple fans to check out. That'll be interesting. But I think like the Dr. Dre TV show, that's music, but it's also a TV show. So I think it makes sense.
Who is that woman who is responsible for the marketing for Apple Music?
Bozeman St. John.
Wasn't she just saying recently that she wanted to move Apple Music towards being more of a pop culture platform and not just a music platform?
Yeah.
And that's reading that?
And a lot of them have said that. Jimmy Iovine said that. Zane Lowe and another guy and her had like a threesome interview recently where they talked about that, where it's about more than just music, and that's what they're trying to build it into.
And so for your point, I mean, about MTV, I think is a great example about how they're trying to like build in like these shows and kind of make it a little bit more pop culture-y.
Yeah, more like the prime of MTV, like early 2000s, you know,
when MTV
late
used
90s.
To be cool.
Yeah, when MTV was cool.
And they weren't
cool.
Just trying to be BuzzFeed.
Yeah. Back when
is
you
MTV
actually wanted to watch
still going
the...
strong? Do you guys know? I haven't watched MTV in so long, but I used to watch all the time, and now it's like...
They
still do
like the VMAs and stuff, I think.
Do they?
I think it's alive, yeah.
they're better known for all those reality shows now, aren't they?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Teen Mom and stuff like that. That's what Apple's eventually going to be doing.
That's right.
16-year-old developer gets pregnant early.
I'm a 16-year-old developer and pregnant. You want to see where Apple's going to be in 30 years, just take a look at where MTV is. Right. Yeah, BuzzFeed really came in and took their lunch, didn't they? I mean, they're kind of doing that pop culture commentary that MTV wants to be doing and that BuzzFeed is kind of known for right now. All righty, well, you might be getting some new Apple content on your... Apple Music subscription here in the next year. Odd, maybe, but I don't know. You get some free television shows. That might be cool. Let's talk about iPhone 8, shall we? So let's wrap up with a couple of iPhone 8 rumors. One, that it might be packing freaking lasers, Buster, right?
Freaking lasers, bro.
Freaking lasers. I feel like you have to try to say it like Dr. Evil. Give me your best Dr. Evil.
I don't want to.
Leonard, do you got a solid Dr. Evil?
I don't know how to do Dr. Evil.
Freaking lasers. With...
That was, you guys sharks with freaking laser beams attached to their freaking heads.
That was solid. That was a solid B minus.
Dude, thank you.
You're welcome.
For a mediocre grade.
What would they be using the freaking lasers for then on the iPhone?
To see, I think, how far away shit is from the phone, like your face. Also, yeah. 3D mapping, laser mapping, stuff like that. And also, what did they say? Infrared sensor or something, I think.
Well, they could probably use this to unlock your phone, and it could be used as like a way to identify you. And I know Microsoft has this built into some of the Surface Books. And, in fact, I have a friend who has a Surface Book, and we were trying to do some stuff on his computer a couple weeks ago. And I was like, well, what's your password? We need to sign in. He's like, I don't know. And I was like, well, how do you not know? Don't you have to type it? He's like, no, it recognizes my face and it signs me in. So he's been using this feature for so long that he actually couldn't remember his passwords anymore. And I mean, if Microsoft got it working on the Surface Book, then maybe it would be something that they add to the iPhone 8. I think pretty cool, as long as it's fast, right? It has to be fast. I don't want to sit there and, you know, hold it against my face for, you know, 30 seconds while this thing thinks and unlocks. It has to be instantaneous, like the Touch ID, don't you think, in order for this to be a useful feature?
Right.
And then the big one for me, which is an IP68 rating. And the reason this would be a big one for me is because I thought the iPhone 7, when I got it, was waterproof, right? I mean, I thought it was going to be useful in some way. Like, oh, you could take it to the shower and listen to music and stuff. But it turns out that wasn't the case at all, because it's splash resistant, but it's not exactly waterproof. And the warranty doesn't cover water damage. So if you take it into the shower and steam gets into it or something, it gets destroyed, you're kind of SOL and Apple's not going to fix that for you for free. But with an IP68 rating, that means you would be able to submerge the phone in up to 3 feet of water for 30 minutes. Is it 30 minutes, Buster?
Yeah, 30 minutes, I think a meter and a half deep.
Oh, so more than 3 feet. So do you think that Apple then would be forced to cover water damage, because they're telling you that your phone is waterproof at that point?
Well, aren't they in that same boat now at the moment, where because they don't make waterproof claims? They say it's water resistant.
Yeah.
Because if they say it's waterproof, then they open themselves up to, you know, fixing phones that have water damage.
So you're right. And I wonder if they'll market, you know, being able to submerge your phone for 3 feet or in 3 feet of water as water resistant. I mean, that kind of sounds like waterproof, right? If they tell you that. Yeah, it has an IP68 rating.
It's the kind of thing the lawyers wig out about. Because I don't think it doesn't. Some of the other Android phones have, you know, that rating, and they don't market them as waterproof.
Yes,
Sony got into trouble, didn't they, with one of their smartphones that came out a couple of years ago? Remember, they said it was waterproof, and they marketed it. You know, people were diving, scuba diving, and going on Splash Mountain, and going in the shower with their phones, and then there were all these lawsuits because it actually didn't, wasn't as waterproof as they said it was, and then they had to withdraw it, didn't they? Remember that phone? It was a Sony one.
Yeah. I vaguely remember this.
I think the problem with saying something's waterproof is, you know, if somebody damages the actual physical phone, like cracks the screen or anything like that, it's going to break the whole thing too. And some people are stupid, and they'll still think that they can, like, swim with it or something. So I don't think they ever will say it's totally waterproof.
You might be right. That might be a pipe dream for me, for them to be like, yeah, take your phone anywhere with you, and it's totally waterproof. I mean, it seems like they're on their way to making it waterproof, but... You're right, Leander. The lawyers are going to be like, let's not hold ourselves accountable if anyone actually takes us in the water and it breaks. Let's just tell them it's water resistant, and that way, if they screw up their phone, We don't have to pay for it. And they can buy a new iPhone. But wouldn't it be great to have a phone that you could take into the shower, you could take on the Whitewater Rapids, Buster, and not have to work, and not have to worry about it getting water damaged. Alrighty, well, believe it or not, that's all the news we have for you guys this week. It's kind of a slow time of year, but that's okay because it gives us time to do some fun stuff. Like next week, we're going to be talking about Apple's biggest flops and their wackiest products. You know, the stuff that came out and that faded into obscurity. Yeah, we'll be reminding you about that stuff. But for now, that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. I can't believe it. We've kept it under an hour, 2 weeks in a row now. This is like a new record. We haven't done this in a long time. Yeah, but if you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, we would love to hear from you. I'm at Aerofon. Buster's BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Was that good? I even did the pinky just to give it some more hope.
I can hear it.
Next time.
I can hear the pinky.
You do that pinky in there.
Yeah, it's not the same without the pinky.
If you don't do the pinky, it sounds totally different.
Right, it sounds fake. That's why Buster Calls also good. 30. Is there any leakage from the headphones this week? Any echo?
I don't hear any, but yeah, turn your headphones up only as loud as you need them, because that's always a problem, especially if you put your ears next to your microphone. Which
yeah,
I think Buster,
I finally figured out.
Don't you?
Well, I was using wired earbuds. Now I finally figured out how to connect my Beats to the MacBook.
Are you using the wireless ones?
Yeah.
Interesting. And you're not getting any lag problems?
No.
I'm like, lag. Are you getting any lag problems?
With a lag.
No. Are you sure?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry, dude. Bad joke. All right. Aren't they all? Aren't they all, though?